By popular demand, Place to Be Nation Wrestling returns to the Dirty South for Talkin' WCW, an episodic wrestler showcase designed to educate, evaluate, and entertain, with matches spanning the intimate stage of Techwood Studios to the heights of Space Mountain. Talkin' WCW presents the best, worst, and most surreal offerings from World Championship Wrestling. So cast your gaze to the Turnertron with hosts Jennifer Smith, Tim Capel, and Greg Phillips.
Hi, welcome to Talkin' WCW. My name is Jennifer Smith, and I'm here with the Doc Manhattan to my Silk Spectre, Tim Capel. How you doing, Tim?
I don't understand you. I don't understand the concept of podcasting. I don't understand the concept of an audience. I just want to chill on Mars and be away from these people. Thank you for that unexpected introduction. Mm-hmm. That was pretty great. And I'm not sure you heard, Jenny, but on this episode of Talking WCW, we're uncensored.
Did I say that? I don't know.
We're uncensored.
We are uncensored. We're always uncensored, though.
If you didn't say it, I think it bears. If you did say it, it bears
repeating. Uncut, uncooked, and uncensored.
Oh, and out of pocket here, running in before his intro, we've got the Night Owl to our completing our threesome here. This is Greg Phillips.
Oh shucks, he's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Rorschach.
Greg,
I was gonna say Rorschach, and then I was like,
"Damn it, Rorschach!"
Well, then I'd have to obliterate you in the snow, and
don't do that. Not on your birthday, Greg Phillips.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. It is my birthday, and unlike Dan Dreiberg, I don't think that my friends are bad friends. I find us all to be one happy, weird triangle of Watchmen love.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Hear, hear. Well said. All right. So we are uncensored, and I'm fucking stoked. Not going to lie.
Right. What a birthday, right?
I mean, there's not.
Better one.
I cannot tell you. Y'all know how much I love Uncensored 95, and there was no doubt I was going to pick a match from that show. And this match I've seen probably 20 times. Today, I'm watching, just fucking cackling, dying, and loving it. So, to me, this one never fails. And so, just getting right into it, I picked Uncensored 95, of course, the Nasty Boys versus Harlem Heat, with Sherry as a prominent role in this match.
Yeah, really. She might as well be an extra match participant. This is a...
she's the MVP.
Because this is a Texas Tornado match, Falls Count Anywhere, in the Tupelo Coliseum. Yes, we're in our inaugural Uncensored is from Tupelo, Mississippi. Would you believe it? So we've talked about one other show from this.
Yes.
This card, quite infamously, your favorite match of all time, Jenny, that being the King of the Road match between Dustin Rhodes and Blacktop Bully. So, that was on, gosh, our second or third episode.
I want to say it was way early.
Way, way early. I think our third episode. So, barring that, you've picked another great installment from the first ever Uncensored.
So, they show a video package to kind of catch you up on our feud here. Basically, it's a bunch of fuckery, you know, between them. anybody want to sum that up? I mean, it's them.
As I could understand it from the package, I vaguely remember this storyline from when I was a kid. There was some mystery woman on the phone that was Harlem Heat, and they wouldn't reveal who it was. Then it turned out to be the debuting sister, Sherry. Or I guess maybe she wasn't debuting. She had already been with Flair, but it was the return. Right. Yes, sister Sherry. And she took on Harlem Heat as her new charges, and they beat the Nasty Boys to win the WCW Tag Team titles at some point in 1994. And they feud all throughout the fall and into the spring. And that brings us all the way to this show at Uncensored, where they're going to have this big homage to the Tupelo concession stand brawl.
And oh, my God.
They're gonna have a wild fight to sort of try to settle their differences once and for all. Of course, things are never quite so simple. WCW, big boys.
Oh, boy.
The Harlem Heat, the champs are out first, but Sherry comes out alone carrying both the belts. So wondering where the boys are. Okay, then Nasty Boys come out looking like only they can look. And
well said.
Sherry's confused, you know, everybody's where they at. And Harlem Heat sneaks in behind them, comes up through the ring to start this epic brawl. Sherry, very instrumental in the distraction phase of the plan. So she's already in it. And it just gets better from here. Okay. So they go really slowly and like basic offense by Harlem, like everything. It's like some clotheslines, some punches. It's, you know, I'm like, okay. Meanwhile, Bobby's talking about Sherry and how she never shuts up. And especially when she's ringside, she's always screaming. She's always like hitting something, you know,
always
wiggling. She's just always working the sideline. Which I love about her. Harlem Heat ends up doing this sort of spike double pile driver deal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No response. Like nobody pops. Nobody dead.
And Booker
it was a slow motion.
Booker lands before the pile driver hits.
Yes.
It was pretty sloppy.
I don't remember if it was Sags or Knobs gets dumped right on top of his
head. Yes. I'm like, oh, shit. So then the Nasty Boys start their comeback. Around on the outside, they're brawling. They grab Sherry and throw her into the ring. In the process, they rip off this coat jacket thing that she's wearing. And she is looking sick underneath. She's like wearing this like one piece and her belly's out. And it's like a low cut back. She looks amazing. She gets the pit stop. For
she goes to Pity City, doesn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, so she gets her face broken. Heart. Oh, God. She sells it so well, too. It just falls out of the ring.
Pity City, which, by the way, does have a pit stop in it and is the capital of Nastyville.
Much geography involved with the Nastyville.
Right? Not my best subject.
Right about now, you know, you're wondering, why did she pick this match? And then Sags grabs a full garbage can and dumps it on Booker T. And this is when it breaks open. And the greatness ensues. After the garbage can spot, they just all just beeline over towards our quote-unquote concession stand, which is one of my most favorite pieces of scenery in all of wrestling that I've ever seen. It is so fake and
it's so flimsy.
It looks like a play. It looks like children built it for their play in high school. And
they said, what do you think is at a concession stand, kids? Well, mustard. Yeah, mustard.
Mustard. Yes. There wasn't any hot dogs that I recall. No,
mustard.
But they have mustard.
Condiment stand.
It was a condiment stand for your funnel cakes, for your fresh squeezed lemonade, your cotton candy, your popcorn. I think that was it. There's about four or five of them.
Quite the assortment. Well, I think we get some hot dogs somewhere because the condiments that come into play are pretty extreme.
There's a picture of pretzels on the wall in their dot matrix printed out sign that says snacks. And
Bobby, he does not know what a funnel cake is, by the way.
No, I know. He's like, what's a funnel cake?
Yeah, what's up with that?
There's no way he doesn't know what a funnel cake
is. If he didn't, he was missing out.
Yeah. So, I mean, from then on, it is just this wild food-filled brawl. Everybody's slipping on all the spilled mustard and lemonade. Everybody busts their ass. Sherry just eats shit. Booker T eats shit. They slam each other into the contest, just breaking everything. Garbage everywhere. Food everywhere. And the crowd, I don't know if they like it or not. I just know I do so much. Mm-hmm. Sherry ends up in the garbage can on the floor, and it we don't even see the finish. It's not even filmed.
No, that's the beautiful horribleness of this match.
Yes,
they completely missed the finish. I have no idea why the bell rang.
Me neither.
Right.
They have no idea. Tony tries to cover, you know, and says...
The wrestlers don't even act like anything happened. The wrestlers are still fighting like it's still in the middle of the match.
Yeah. And then they just wander off after the bell rings. But then they do the replay. And you see Nick Patrick do the three count. So it was just hidden. They just didn't catch it. So I love this little corner that they're in the arena, too. Yep. It's just... sort of sectioned off, and it's perfect for
everybody's sliding around,
slipping. Just falling everywhere. I mean, I was dying. I just love it so much. It's so messy.
It's the beautiful chaos. Beautiful chaos of Uncensored. The only place you're going to find that kind of action anywhere in the world is at Uncensored.
Right.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Or at the ECW.
Well, you know, I was going to say this particular pay-per-view certainly exists, not just to fill up a annual, you know, 12-month pay-per-view calendar, which we're increasingly getting close to at this point in 1995, but we got to compete with ECW, you guys. I mean, they're out of control.
That's true.
The mutants in Philly are just, you know, they're running roughshod over the big two here in 1995, and we got to come up with something to balance the scales here, and clearly, this was the ticket.
running a bingo hall in Philly.
Hell yeah!
Guess what? We're gonna run an actual arena, but in Tupelo, Mississippi.
That's right.
Take
we'll
that.
See your extreme. We will see your extreme and raise you a boxer versus wrestler.
How dare you? Know?
We're gonna a king of the road match. A concession stand brawl. A karate exhibition match. Thank you. So much variety up and down. I mean,
it's the best.
Ric Flair in woman's clothing.
Yes, and with red painted nails.
Yes.
Oh, and with God. Vader. With motherfucking Vader.
Yes. With his Flair with his hairy ass arms cutting that promo after. Which, I mean, cuts to that promo like right after this match. Yes. Which, I mean, this show is just insane.
It's like a fever dream. The whole
thing. Yes. And that's
the way I think to describe this match is it starts out just like any generic Nasty Boys match. And then it's like, then they get to the stands and it becomes a fever dream. There's
edible kicks in.
Yeah. There's ketchup and there's sliding around. There's people with drinks spilled all over them. they're slipping over, falling, and trying just simple things like clotheslines and kicks. And then you got Booker T over here trying to do actual wrestling moves. And I'm like, no, he's trying to pick him up for a body slam. Like, don't do it. You're gonna fall.
Don't do it. Yeah. Anytime someone put their arms over their head, it was over. You knew as soon as they shifted their center of gravity. In any way, it was like, nope, you're not going to be able to maintain yourself.
Who is it that picks up the trash can and falls?
Just falls. I think it was Knobs. I remember him just eating shit. He just like completely, it just looks like he falls out of frame. Like he's done.
Is it just me? Am I crazy?
Or are we
all dying laughing?
We are all such fans of slapstick comedy.
Okay, thank God.
And people falling, I think that. But
the falling kills me. Oh my God.
The falling just every. I want to give this match a star every time somebody falls.
I know.
By the end of it. Like, if this match doesn't make you laugh on some, or at least smile, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what are you doing?
There is something wrong with you. Yeah. And it's funny, Jenny, you say the edibles kicked in at a certain point. Well, it's like there is a point when the match sort of becomes the match. And mm-hmm. it's like you get the kind of standard bullshit brawling for the first, I don't know, 5 minutes. As soon as the Nasty Boys decide to just stop selling, that's when it's like, all right, this shit is on now. And it's just like all of a sudden, you know, that's when we're taking it to the damn concession stand. We're getting a pallet of cotton candy in the face. The mustard and ketchup, like Stevie Ray looks like he has a beard made of mustard at one point. It is absurd.
It's awesome.
poor Sherry, she saves the best for last because she honestly is the MVP of this match.
She is.
Not only by getting involved, holding her own, but she manages to stay on her damn feet for the better part of it, in heels, no less. I mean, we see what she's wearing, mm-hmm. but then at the end, it's such a, you talk about unsportsmanlike, cowardly move. It's, I think
he
it's
just
sad.
Pushes
she just
her.
Sends her, sends her flying. She just, and she's, I mean, she's not even like of her own volition. She just slides across that ice floor and then eats absolute shit. Cause she slides into Knobs and Booker mm-hmm. T, who are still like trying to get up after the pin that was completely off camera, and she just slides into them and goes down hard. I mean, it's, you know, that was no fault of hers, right? Because for the most part, she held it together. The rest of them, though, there's just, oh my god,
he is really doing yeoman's, or is it yo woman's work in the match?
Yo woman's.
Right. And the commentary is just so fucking priceless over it.
They go over
to like fuck around with the lights at one point, and Heenan's like, "That's $1 million worth of lights right there." They don't care. Like, really?
As if that's gonna matter on a WCW show. Yeah.
Didn't know what a funnel cake was.
Oh my god.
Crazy person.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that our show today reminded me of in doing the research was, man, WCW commentary, to be so maligned on in certain internet nerd circles was awesome. Like,
awesome.
Especially in that era. Like, okay, I get the Nitro era, not as much. And
oh, yeah.
But, like, that era of WCW commentary was tremendous, in my opinion.
Oh, we got we had a full podcast of tremendous commentary with her match.
Really, yeah.
I mean,
to
they
go
were
along
outstanding.
With these matches. Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh,
yeah, I mean, not. I guess I'll wait till the end. But any other thoughts on this one before we move on to our next uncensored?
Just a like I said, is this gonna? How would JR put it? They're not going to be confused with Gotch and Hackenschmidt or Briscoe and Funk, but what they are is they're fighting. And in my terms, I would just say it's just a fun ass match. Like, you can turn your brain off. It's not going to be anything, you know, technical or anything like that. Of course, it's the Nasty Boys, for God's sake. But when they get into the stands, that's when the match really begins, to Tim's point. And once that happens, it's so much fun. If you can't laugh at this, people sliding around, falling, not able to execute simple things because they're nice, mixed together on the floor. It's just awesome in its own way.
It's the type of match I think you show someone who isn't a wrestling fan or maybe doesn't get wrestling just to be like, okay, you know, this is not what every wrestling match is, but this is something special, right? This is kind of the type of thing that really makes you pop when you see it, and it has that sort of universal appeal that transcends whatever your particular tastes are in wrestling. Mm-hmm. Again, as long as you're not a crazy person, I think there's a lot
or
of joy
humorless
around.
Yeah
or completely yeah completely humorless, which I guess some people are, but
yeah,
there's just a lot of joy to be found here.
Absolutely. And it doesn't overstay its welcome. Like, it doesn't,
yeah,
you're not sitting there for 30
like 8 minutes. Yeah.
Very, it's quick, it's to the point. And again, I will admit the early part is not the most interesting, but the stands, it's so fun, and you'll be able to turn your brain off and just enjoy it, in my opinion. So,
all right, next up, I think Tim's pick, right?
Yep.
Yes. So this is just 1 year later. So, Uncensored, 1996. This from March 24th, and it is in the Tupelo Coliseum once again, you guys.
Oh, back to back.
What do you think about running these back to back, this show in this Coliseum?
I think they made a lot of money probably in that first run, and they came back for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing they probably sold out because it's Tupelo, mm-hmm. and I think.
Do there.
How much does it seat? Yeah, it seats like
right
12,000 or something like that. So they could probably sell it out. But I don't know. I'm kind of like, look, I've been to Tupelo plenty of times in my, my day. And
I wondered if either of you had. Yeah.
Yeah. No. There ain't much to it. It's Elvis' house, and that's basically it. I think in commentary, Dusty said there's 30,000 people in the city. And I would think that WCW, even in 96, pre-NWO, probably could have gone to a different market and explored it. Yeah. But nonetheless, if you can sell out the arena, you can sell out the arena. And I don't know if they did or
didn't. Yeah.
It looked pretty full.
And these are, I mean, these are booked so far in advance. It's like, even if they're cleaning up pretty good on live events in 96, you're already committed, you know, once you, you know, back in 95, when you said, all right, we got to figure this out. Well, one good turn deserves another, right?
And I'm sure there's crowds that if you put the match that we're about to talk about in front of certain crowds, it would have been better
received
by the audience. But like,
So I'll just say that, once again, we have talked about the most infamous match from this card, that being the main event, the Doomsday Cage match, the Alliance to End Hulkamania. That was one of my picks. That was on our Kevin Sullivan episode.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah,
not sure. Yes. Check the archives for that.
Installment.
And
yeah, not sure the number. It was an early one, though. Definitely an early one.
Let's refresh the people, just for those who may have missed that episode, on what that match actually who are the participants of that match, Tim?
Well, you've got Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage as a tag team, as they often were, right? Versus the Alliance to End Hulkamania, consisting of Ric Flair and Arn Anderson.
Yes.
With the Faces of Fear, Ming and Barbarian. With the Final Solution, very questionable name.
The Ultimate Solution, right?
The Ultimate, introduced as the Final Solution, changed to the Ultimate Solution because they realized, what are we doing?
Yes.
Plus, Z Gangsta, a.k.a. And they were late to the party, right? They didn't quite show up for the match on time. Z Gangsta was Zeus, right? So
referred to, and by famously, I mean famously, people that have listened to our show referred to on commentary by the Brain as the Gangster.
The Gangster, and Lex Luger and Kevin Sullivan. So that's the Kevin Sullivan connection. Fantastic. And wouldn't you know, the Faces win somehow.
Weird.
Yeah, it's something. This, amazing. However, is a little bit more straightforward. The match I chose that we're going to be talking about is Lord Steven Regal with Jeeves, referred to as Chives.
Chives!
commentary. Dusty Rhodes cannot say Jeeves. But Regal is taking on the Belfast Bruiser, otherwise known as Fit Finley. So I'm going to refer to him alternatively as the Bruiser and Finley throughout this. Okay. So just keep that in mind. This version of Fit Finley, as the Belfast Bruiser, has a mustache and a wild gray mullet.
It sure does.
It's a wiry looking mullet. Just
like a red mustache and a gray mullet.
Yeah, it's, oh man, it's a lot going on.
I call it more like a redneck brawler.
Yeah, for the Irish, you know, Belfast Bruiser, he's off. Yeah. He's not entirely out of place here in Tupelo,
yeah.
I feel.
Yeah, he looks like somebody you might find at a Tupelo bar late at night.
Oh, shit.
There you go. Well,
unfit Finley.
Uncensored Fit Finley.
Yeah.
This is announced as a special grudge match, by the way. I'm not sure what that means, but we start things off. I mean, this is, we just get off to a hot start here.
Yeah,
so before the bell even rings, Bruiser just fucking blasts with his Mad Max jacket. I don't even know how, it's like a leather jacket with all this extra crap on it.
And he slapped Chives on the way.
Oh, and he slapped the shit
right
out
in the fucking face. It was hilarious.
Yeah, and Jeeves just unceremoniously
walks off.
If that had been me, I think I would have just started crying. I think I would have burst into tears if that man just slapped me.
I think he was shocked.
Credit, credit to Chives for eating that too. Like that.
Ooh.
Oh man. Ooh. Well, he had no choice. I don't think he saw
his hands were
at all.
Full. He had stuff in his hands. There was no blocking.
Wow. That would have felled the normal
just mess. I felt it on my face.
Yes, exactly. Just slapped this non-wrestler, sent him on his way.
Damn, pal.
So yeah, that's already we're like, whoa, what are we dealing with here? So you know, bell rings. Bruiser, then just goes to work on Regal with these overhand chops, stiff kicks. Regal counters with a hip toss and gets some European uppercuts in there. But Bruiser comes back with a big boot, then some elbow drops. I mean, everything is super, super stiff. So when I say, when I'm calling these conventional moves here, just imagine the stiffest, as most weight as you can possibly put behind them. That's how these moves are delivered.
Yep.
So back up, we get a short arm clothesline from Finley, sends Regal again to the canvas. We get a pin attempt pretty early on by Belfast. Bruiser, Regal escapes. Then he takes a scintillating kick to the spine. I felt that on my spine. Mm-hmm. Regal then backed into the corner, but he battles out again with those uppercuts, goes to work on the mat. Regal, with that great mat work, he's grinding that forearm right into the bridge of Finley's nose. They emphasize it on commentary, so you really know what's happening. Getting that across, it's not just, because it's easy to watch and go, well, it's, I don't know, some basic mat work, nothing exciting here. But when they emphasize, like, how Regal's really laying it in, you get the sense that this is nasty, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, match then spills outside. Finley drops Regal across the guardrail, and then smashes the shoulder into the ring post. Back in the ring, he continues to work over the arm. That's kind of the extent of the, let's say, psychology limb work we get in this match. Mm-hmm. It's not a lot, but it's there. Regal manages to escape that, whips Bruiser into the corner, and there's a cool spot where Finley, he tries like this blind leapfrog to sort of counter, thinking Regal's going to charge him. Regal does not do that, however, and counters the counter with a drop kick. So more than you'd expect to see from these guys, you know, in terms of that kind of athleticism and, I don't know, just coordination.
Mm-hmm.
But then Bruiser takes Regal down by the injured arm, continues working that over. Regal manages to free himself with a series of palm strikes, look gross as shit. And then a knee drop right to the face. Headbutt by Belfast Bruiser, who then drops his knee directly on Regal's nose. And then a big senton, again, all of his weight coming down right on Regal. Get some brawling outside the ring, both men battling over a souffle on the ring apron. Regal wins it. He's actually outside on the ring apron, so he dumps Finley on the floor. Regroup back in the ring, and Finley is just goading Regal on. The fans are kind of getting into it now, like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. Commentators are really into it. Mm-hmm. They've been into it along the way here. And Regal answers with just a blatant kick right in the dick. I mean, I don't know how else to call it. they try to play it off like it came in, you know, kind of to the low abdomen, but nah, he just straight up.
Yeah, Tony says it's the gluteus maximus. And Dusty,
that's right.
And Dusty is glutimus maximus.
The glutimum maximum. and they have some argument back and forth over that. Now, how well Dusty would be able to perform after getting hit in the glutimum maximum himself. But this match, I mean, it's been an absolute stalemate, right? I mean, it's hard
brutal
to call
shit, too.
And it's brutal as shit. Neither guy has gained any sort of advantage for more than, I don't know, a few moves at a time, right? So it's just back and forth, back and forth. Regal working a kind of modified abdominal stretch now on the mat. Pounds Belfast Bruiser with clubbing blows to the chest. And then a prone Fit Finley on the mat, blast Regal, just blast him right in the fucking mouth with a straight right hand.
Jesus. Me too.
That one. Yeah.
I mean, you could tell Regal didn't really see it coming either. So, I mean, that's the definition of a sucker punch, really. Announce team is just marking out over it. They're just at this point. They've
me
given
too.
Up kind of trying to call their, just, oh. And Regal, I mean, he looks rattled at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, as stiff as the match has been, they've kind of been taking it. And for the most part, just they keep coming. But, you know, Regal can't really fight this off but so much. He takes a powder on the outside. And he's also starting to bleed, as mm-hmm. Regal is wont to do, from the nose or from the mouth, maybe. But Finley drags him back into the ring. And this time it's Regal sending Finley over the top rope to answer.
That was awesome.
Some more brawling
on
the outside.
That spot was incredible to watch. Like, for a guy like, you don't expect that to be Finley and Regal. You would expect like Rey Mysterio and Ultimo Dragon to do mm-hmm. a spot that involves kicking the other guy from the mat over the top rope to the outside of the ring. That was incredible. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, he propels him with his feet, I should say, over the top rope. Get some more brawling on the outside, and then, unceremoniously enough, the Blue Bloods, of consisting of Squire David Taylor and Earl Robert Eaton, Bobby Eaton, if you will,
beautiful.
They run in. Beautiful. He's a sweetheart. They now run in to jump Finley for the disqualification here at Uncensored. kind of a black eye on this match.
Literally, after Finley gets fucking rocked again at the very end, after
Regal just
lays him out.
Yeah. So the Blue Bloods have so they're holding Finley's arms behind his back, and Regal just comes in and backhands this man. Just. Backhands the shit out. I guess a receipt, really, right?
For yes.
That sucker punch. And everyone just brawls to the back. We have settled absolutely nothing here. Nothing. These guys would continue to feud throughout 1996, I think culminating in, the parking lot brawl on Nitro?
Yep.
Pretty awesome match in its own right. Worth checking out.
I don't know if you're ready for my thoughts, but I have.
I'm ready. I'm ready if you're ready.
Yeah. Because, goddamn, I don't know what their special grudge was. right. I don't know if you guys know either, but.
They're surly Europeans. I think that's their grudge.
Was it real? Because it seemed like it was real.
Finley's from Ireland and Regal's from England, so they don't.
That's it, right? Okay. The absolute hate. In this match, like, it just seeps into every strike, punch, kick. I mean, goddamn. Like, I was worried for Regal by the end of it, but even more so for Finley by the time he got knocked the fuck out at the end. Rarely have I seen that long of them. It's long. It's like 17
minutes. And this is a long, for as stiff as it is, this is a 17-minute match.
And they just, it seemed like they had another 20 minutes of hate in them, to me, before Regal had to end it, but it's unique in the amount of absolute hatred that just flows out of, and the real feeling. It just looked like guys were boxing, you know, like at times because it was that much real to me. And Regal is just amazing. Like, this man, like, he's incredible. Like Greg said, like, these guys don't look like they should be able to do this stuff. Like, some of the stuff they pulled out in the match. And I've seen it before, but it's been a minute and I liked, oh boy, it's way up there for WCW matches for me.
Yeah. Well,
I love to hear that.
It doesn't feel like a wrestling match. It feels like a fight.
It's
kind of a cliche to say that, but it struck me watching this, and maybe it's probably a good thing, but there are very, very, very few matches that you will see anywhere today that are worked like this because you guys are legit beating the shit out of each other. Like, whether even in the holds, like the holds that they're applying are not just let's lay in an arm bar and, you know, you'll fire up and punch me a few times and I'll knock you back down, whatever. I mean, they're cranking on this stuff.
They're really working. It's not like there's really no rest holds in this. It's like if they go into a submission, they're working the hole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or it's like you said, the one where Regal puts the like grounded abdominal stretch kind of thing on him, and then he's mm-hmm. palming him in the face the whole time he's got him in it.
Yep.
Smacking him in the face with his palm, and the violence in this to me is way more visceral than like if they had hit each other with kendo sticks or whatever sort of hardcore matches are of like, oh, look how physical and violent. This is way more physical and violent because this is like you can see the damage that it's doing. Like you can see the welts, and you know, Regal, as I understand it, broke his nose in this, or Finley broke Regal's nose in this match. Mm-hmm. And you can see it. The only thing that I kind of like hated was the production, because at that time WCW was so anti-blood.
Yes.
They zoom out so far. They should have gone in and gotten a real good look, and it would have been perfect too for just because WCW didn't do that ever at that time, and it would have been nice to have that one example that they could have shown for all the people that say, "Oh, wrestling's fake" and all that. Oh, you think wrestling's fake? This dude just got his nose broken and he's still wrestling. And he showed that.
Punched in the face.
I think that if they had done like a close-up shot of Regal's face, that would have been perfect there. But that being said, one of the things that also struck me after this match, and really during it, is the live crowd doesn't really know what to make of it at times. They love the physicality, but there's times they don't know what to make of it. But these two guys are not so much wrestling for the live crowd. Maybe the first couple rows they are. But they're wrestling for the cameras, because the cameras are what's picking up the fact that you mentioned the sucker punch in the ring. They go outside the ring and Finley hits him again with a punch right to the jaw. Mm-hmm. And it looks almost like it skips the jaw. And that might be the one that hit his nose and busted him open.
Yeah.
These guys are just laying it into each other for their business. It's incredible to watch. It's a style of wrestling that you couldn't see every week because nobody could sustain it, but like, it's so
right
it's so fun,
and people don't know what to make of it. Like you said, the crowd's kind of weary sometimes.
Yeah,
into it,
dude. I was into this match, like the fact that it feels so different from everything else that you're going to see. I mean, you're going to see what you would see later that night in the Doomsday Cage or whatever, does not even closely remotely resemble what you're seeing. Guys are just, you know, it looks like they just met in an alley and they're trying to tear each other apart, you know. Before we go too far beyond this, I want to also mention the fact that we find out during the course of this match that Dusty Rhodes doesn't know where Ireland is. Bobby is explaining to the audience that, well, Finley, Bobby, of course, he's giving one of his patented airport stories. Well, you know, when I was recently in London and England and Ireland, and all the people there were telling me about how tough this Finley or this Belfast Bruiser is and how many people he's knocked out. And then a few minutes later in the match, he's like, well, you know, as I understand it, these two guys hate each other because of their heritage. You know, Finley's from Ireland and Regal's from England, and they don't get along. And Dusty goes, well, they ain't right next to each other. They probably ain't fought each other before. And Tony's like, you know, I hate to defend the brain, Dusty, but I mean, they are. And he goes, come on now. Y'all telling me what you think? You think Ireland ain't 5-7 miles away from London, England? It ain't that close.
Well,
geography's hard. Already said.
Ain't nothing to do with no Ireland. So that was off, and the commentary was great. They're loving it. I can't say enough about this chemistry between these guys, the physicality between them. And I think that the fans, another thing against the fans is I don't think WCW had done a very good job. And my memory of this era is reasonably good. I was watching every Nitro as a kid and everything. And my memory of it is they didn't do a very good job of building up the Belfast Bruiser as a character. Like he just kind of appeared one day and started, and he was angry at Regal, but nobody really knew why.
Well, that's what I wondered. Like, what the hell happened to make these guys
Had they done the Saturday night match yet, which I think was Finley's debut, I want to say.
I want to say they did something where he jumped out of the crowd.
Yeah, something like that.
The whole angle almost played out on Saturday night until they decided to do that parking lot brawl. Memory serves, but that part's hazy. But I don't think they had done a good job of making people really care about the Belfast Bruiser yet. But like, if they had, that might have helped too. But honestly, I don't really care because the match is so physical and it holds up so well all these years later. Of again, obviously, you would hope to have a better finish than a disqualification and qualification match pay per view. But you know, what can you do?
Exactly. This is the type of match that I wouldn't normally like, I feel, because in a lot of ways, it's really the antithesis of professional wrestling, right? Which the whole idea, the entire concept of professional wrestling is make it look good, make it look like it hurts, but it doesn't.
And right.
This is, I mean, complete opposite of that. As you said, it doesn't even play that well to the live crowd because they're probably not. They're probably not able to really detect how stiff a lot of these shots are, especially if you're in the cheap seats, excuse me.
And there's no video board in Tupelo, Mississippi.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. You're not getting, so on television, you know, you do get that, but it's a lot of strikes and they're legit strikes. So it's like, this isn't really wrestling. This is just kind of fighting, but I don't know. I think I'm forgiving of it because at the same time, it does not feel like, and Greg, you've heard me use this description. There's a lot of modern wrestling that when they go for this sort of real fight feel, I don't know, a lot of, and this may be a mischaracterization, I'm just going to say, a lot of strong style matches, right? Mm-hmm. To me, play as just fake MMA.
Right.
And this, and I kind of hate that style of granted, it's valid. It's as valid as any other type of professional wrestling. I just hate it.
I think it's the hardest to make look good.
Yes. And if I wanted to watch MMA, I would just watch real MMA, not fake MMA.
Mm-hmm.
But this does not look like a mixed martial arts match. This looks like a barroom brawl, you know? Yep. With some occasional, I'm going to stretch you in there because they're absolute monsters and they're trained to, in the ways of killing each other and very painful, in a very painful manner. Right. And this is how these guys came up in the business. So I don't think there's any true heat between them, like behind the scenes. I just think it's like, hey, you know, you used to work this style. I work this style. What do you think? Let's have a go of it. Let's show these American fans what, you know, European, old school European wrestling looks like.
It's probably,
I think they were just both game for it.
Yeah, because I've heard Ric Flair and others, Steamboat and other guys say that you always hit your friends the hardest in wrestling. So they probably.
Yeah.
Good trust of each other that
right,
which I'm sure, you know, maybe Finley violated a little bit with the broken nose, but I'm sure he was fine with the receipt.
Right.
You know, that's just part of it. And I think the only guy today that I see that works similarly to this in at least in American wrestling is probably Gunther. And why I like Gunther matches so much.
Yep.
Yeah, nobody.
Sheamus is capable as well. I would say.
Yes, you know? I saw in that match between. Yeah, Sheamus and McIntyre have had some matches like this too. That all Europeans, all three Europeans.
Yeah, imagine right.
It's such a rare style to see because it's you have to really be game for it, and you have to be able to bring it and take it. And both of these guys, Finley and Regal, clearly could do those. So I think this is a fantastic showcase for them, and arguably they would have even better matches later.
Yeah, so I'm just checking, and the Saturday night match I'm thinking of is actually after this. It's on April 13th on WCW Saturday night, and then they have that parking lot brawl. That's on Nitro.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the 29th of April. in 96.
That was freaking wild.
Yeah, that was great. So, yeah, I mean, I felt like, you know, going into this show, this was sort of an obvious standout from, you know, mm-hmm. you look at all the matches from Uncensored, and it's like, this is definitely one that I think sits at the top for a lot of people. It's not far from what I would call a hidden gem, but felt like we'd get heat if we didn't talk about it because it's right there.
Mm-hmm.
I would much rather talk about this than, I don't know, some weird, obscure, doesn't even really fit the remit of Uncensored, right? Because this at least feels like a match that would take place and is befitting of this theme. Though it does end in a DQ. But that's very WCW.
Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's, yeah, all that baked in here. So, all right, guys. We've got one more.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's going to be mine, actually.
Yeah.
A show very near and dear to my heart, ladies and gentlemen.
I wonder why. Right.
Well, you see, we're going to fast forward 2 years. We're going to skip 97 entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go all the way to 1998, March of 98. And we're going to go to the Mobile Civic Center in Mobile, Alabama, hometown.
We're out of Tupelo. Okay.
Nice.
Of Papio Daniel Governor. Of myself, Greg Phillips. And this was the first. Let me make sure I'm right about this. Yes.
I was thinking about this too. I know where you're going with it. Yeah.
Triple threat match, I think we would call it.
Right. It's called a triple jeopardy match, but it's what we would think of today as a triple threat match. It's that style of match.
The triple jeopardy. It's the first three-way match that I'm aware of in WCW.
Yeah.
And this was also, by the way, the first televised event that I ever attended.
Nice.
No kidding. Okay, so you saw this live.
I did. I was so excited because when I was a kid, I got to go to house show. When we lived in Mobile, I went to one WCW/NWA house show, and then we moved to Florida for a while, and I got to go to like maybe two or three house shows for WCW, and then we moved to Mobile, and I never had a chance to go to any events until this. And found out WCW was having a pay-per-view. I was just ending eighth grade. And my friend Kevin hooked us up with tickets, actually. And so we went to myself, my friend Kevin, his family, and like I think maybe one of my cousins went to my mom was with me because I needed somebody to hand me money. So we went to the pay-per-view and at the Civic Center. It was awesome for a kid. Yeah. These wrestlers in person that I've been wanting to see for so long. Got my Sting shirt, got my Raven shirt, you know, it was all great.
Awesome.
But this was I can say this without hesitation, leaving that show, this was the match everybody was talking about. And that's not an airport story. This one actually happened. We were all buzzing about this. Even at school the next week, all the kids were talking about this match. This is a triangle or triple jeopardy match for the United States Championship between the champion, Diamond Dallas Page, defending against Raven, aforementioned, and Chris Benoit in a match that is it's a triple threat match that, you know, a lot of times it just feels like triple threat matches or four-way matches are booked just to fill time or fill space on a card.
Right, or just to get everybody on the card, yeah.
Right. This was the rare, nowadays, triangle match that actually had a reason to exist, because as we've talked about in our previous Raven episode, Chris Benoit and Raven had been feuding throughout the winter in WCW, and they had had a badass match at Sold Out, which mm-hmm. we reviewed on the
which show. We covered.
Yeah, and then DDP and Benoit were kind of feuding over the United States Championship as well, because Benoit had some momentum, and at the same time, Raven was starting this long-term story with DDP, talking about how they grew up together and had the same mentor, Jake the Snake, and talking about, you know, Raven saying that the Snake gave him the DDT and he didn't leave that legacy to Paige. And so all three guys have an issue with each other. Benoit hates Raven. Raven hates Benoit. DDP hates Raven. Raven hates DDP. DDP Benoit, they don't hate each other, but they don't like
they
each
were
other.
In a respect feud at yeah. the time. They had a match, they had a singles match at Super Brawl.
That's right.
And that's where DDP retained. And basically it was just DDP had won the US championship and just like needed something to do, needed a challenger, and he kind of threw it out to Benoit and was like, hey, I've been watching you, paying attention to your matches. I think you're deserving. You're an uncrowned champion here in WCW, yada, yada. At the same time, Benoit was in the midst of this feud with Raven. So Benoit, very, very busy at this point here in WCW. Came up short in that match, but he's still in the title picture. But he's got, you know, unfinished business with Raven. Like you said, things are heating up between DDP and Raven. Makes all the sense in the world to do this.
Absolutely. And at this time in my 14 year old, I was about to turn 14. I was not yet 14. And in my life, my two of my probably five favorite wrestlers at the time were Raven and Chris Benoit. I loved both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that being said, this crowd loved DDP.
Yes.
They did. Oh, my God. they are hot for him.
Wow.
And this match, I was worried that this wouldn't hold up well in my memory of it, because I've since seen so many probably better matches live and in person in my adult life. But like, honestly, this was just as good as I remembered it being, because they start the match off with a triple collar and elbow tie up
twice.
That's great. Yeah.
The point where they fall out of the ring in it. So one of the common complaints that I see people make about triple threats, and I don't make it anymore because I've just kind of accepted it for what it is now. But like, the complaint is that so many of them are just separate singles matches, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So one guy stays outside the ring and two guys wrestle in the ring, and then they trade off and another guy lays outside the ring and the other two wrestle in the ring. This doesn't really happen in this, or when it does happen, they explain it in a very logic
it's justified. Yeah,
exactly. Like, so the three of them are literally all fighting at the same time for the early parts of this match. Mm-hmm. They're the triple collar and elbow. They're fighting around at ringside. It's no disqualification, by the way. Falls count anywhere. Raven's rules, if you will. And they're brawling over across they start in the ring and then they brawl all over the place. Chops. And everybody is fighting within their characters. DDP early on does this great plancha over the top rope on top of Raven and Benoit, which gets Bobby Heenan on his case. Why would you run that risk? Why, you know, what if they move? And then like a second later, not a second later, but a few minutes later, Raven does a running dive over the top rope and just kind of like turns in the air and falls on both of them. And Heenan's like, yeah, who cares? Just jump on him.
Yes.
It's
okay when Raven does it.
Yeah, they're just throwing caution to the wind here on each other and really going all out. They're clearly all three guys are clearly out there to prove a point. They're trying to steal the show. It's blatant, and it's a good thing they did. And they go up they brawl up the ramp. You know, Plunder gets involved. We got a trash can from Raven. We've got you know, he's smashing guys with it. Benoit and Raven decide that DDP is becoming a nuisance, so they decide to briefly team up on DDP, which shocks the crowd for a little bit, and take Paige, and they throw him through the uncensored sign, and they pull him out, and then they throw him through another portion.
Do it again.
And then it becomes Benoit versus Raven, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And so Benoit and Raven are laying into each other, and they brawl all the way back down the ramp. And you know, Benoit at one point does a snap suplex on the ramp. I think that was to Paige actually before they threw him through the sign. And they end up back in the ring, and you know, Raven is getting beat on by Benoit, who's unloading his fury on him. And as those two are going at it, fast forward a few minutes, and all the action is great, but here's DDP, like this great movie visual of pay, and he's got the taped ribs that he had for 2 years, and he's laying on the ground and he's crawling to the ring, trying to get back to the ring, and the fans are getting into it and they're rumbling, and sure enough, DDP makes it back into the ring and he starts going off, and
running through his patented offense. And they do one of – I didn't remember this because this is a spot that gets a pop every time it's done today. And this might be the first time it was done, at least on a national stage. They do the a triple German suplex.
Yes.
Where Benoit is doing the three Germans on Raven, which was pictures at that time. And then DDP grabs Benoit from behind and Germans Benoit while he Germans Raven, which got probably the biggest pop of the night, honestly, as far, or at least of that match.
That was so sick.
We lost our minds in the crowd there. Jumping and yelling. Awesome stuff. Benoit at one point goes up for the diving headbutt, hits a splash instead because Raven, I think, was too close, and Paige breaks it up. They're having just a knockdown drag out, and then Raven gets the table involved, and it looks as if we're gonna actually before we get to the table, they have the Raven's flock comes in and Raven gets Benoit to hold DDP, and he's handed this cardboard what appears to be a cardboard sign from Lodi, and he smashes
use my sign right
yeah
and he smashes it over DDP's head. And then he unwraps it, and of course it's a stop sign, which would of course become canon for the WCW video game WCW NWO Revenge, and one of the go-to weapons on that game. And so Raven hits him with the stop sign, then Benoit hits Raven with the stop sign, and then the table gets involved. Benoit sets up Raven on the top rope like he's going to give him a big superplex through the table, perhaps. DDP awakens, shoves Benoit over the top rope to the floor, gets up on the ropes, grabs Raven, and we think he's going to do the superplex through the table. But instead, he looks out, he turns around, and he hesitates, and he delivers a diamond cutter off the middle rope onto the table. Doesn't really break. It made it actually look better than it didn't break.
It did.
And
it looked pretty nasty.
It looked horrible for Raven. It looked like it had to hurt like hell. I'd probably be surprised if it didn't bruise a rib or crack a rib. But, man, it looked awesome. And the sell from Raven, when he – like, the table is knocked out, crack in it, and Raven just – like, his legs are splayed up in the air. Like, he's just done. And the crowd is just molten at this point. DDP has hit the best finisher in the business on Raven through a table.
Sick.
Rolls him over, pins him, 1, 2, 3. Diamond Dallas Page retains. Benoit comes in after the match. You don't know what he's going to do. He decides to help Page up to his feet in a show of respect, and he blows a snot rocket at Raven for good measure.
My God.
It ruled in March of 98, and it ruled tonight when I watched it before our show.
I mean, it has ECW written all over it. It's funny because Benoit and Raven, obviously, both went through ECW, and I consider them in my heart ECW, and DDP not so much. So initially I was like, well, okay, Benoit and Raven are going to rock this match, and DDP's going to be with his kidney pads and not really do that much. Boy, that motherfucker proved me wrong, because the more I watch the match, I'm like, oh fuck, when he does that dive over the top rope,
yeah,
that's in the early stages of the match, and I'm like, okay, I see you, DDP, you're gonna do this. And then all of the cool ass like triple man moves that they weaved throughout the match, it's like
the double sleeper that
The chokehold. They did a double jawbreaker, Raven did, towards the end. And it's just really cool because it looked organic. It didn't look, you didn't see them setting up quite as much as you can in like modern wrestling, to me.
No, I agree.
It just had this fluidity.
Not so much moving of furniture, right?
Right. And which I enjoy the moving of furniture aspect sometimes, but when you're going to like do those team moves, they just had this flow to them that I thought was pretty rare. But then, as graceful as they are beating the shit out of each other. Yep. It had that real ECW flair, especially when you get the stop sign brought in and you got your tables, you get your chairs. There's a drop toe hold in there towards the end, which I love. Just so many great spots. The trash can spot was great. The DDP twice through the sign. Amazing. Like it was everything that I want in a Raven match, honestly, because you guys told their stories weaving within stories, and that's what Raven does. He does that, and he does this well.
I was going to say, this. You said this match had ECW fingerprints. I totally agree. It had Raven's fingerprints all over. We know that DDP was known for plotting out his matches meticulously, but this felt like Raven's match. Like, this felt like he was the guy kind of like, because if you think about it, there weren't a lot of DDP and Benoit one-on-one sequences as there were with Raven. I think Raven was kind of
guy. Right.
He's the central storyteller, so that makes sense. And the finish was...
Yeah.
Oh, sick. Sick. I love that the table didn't break.
Yep.
Pop for that. I don't know. I this was... After the end of watching like all three of these matches, I'm like, dude, this might be like my favorite group that we've ever covered. Like, just with the, even with my match, which was totally silly and the opposite of the other two matches, I don't know. They
variety is great though. All three
are
way different from each other.
And I love how they represent the whole uncensored brand. And I just thought we knocked all these picks out of the park. And I freaking love this match.
I would agree. Real well-rounded picks here for this show. And Jenny, I'm so happy to hear that we are going to make a DDP mark out of you yet.
With his kidney pads, for sure.
He's going to come out with his kidney pads, and then he wins you over.
He did, because, I mean, the other two, I've seen what they...
Yeah,
you know, DDP is just a different wrestler, but he was hanging in there.
I also love that you said kidney pads, because yes, everyone thinks that it's to protect his ribs, but they always emphasize, no, his kidneys are damaged. That's what this is for. So,
and then they brought out a kitchen sink. Even Benoit had a
kitchen sink. Comes in, which is like foreshadowing in a way to the singles match that Raven and DDP have at the next pay-per-view, which I believe, didn't we talk about that on
I want to say there was a kitchen
Raven show.
Spring Stampede, Raven wins the United States Championship, and then the next night loses it to Goldberg. And
he wins it by DDTing DDP on the kitchen sink.
Which led to the kitchen sink being a weapon in their game Revenge, too.
Yeah. Yes, it's sure. And it was in Thunder as well. For PlayStation. I definitely have a soft spot for this, just because this... I will grant you, it's not the greatest feud of all time. I think it's my favorite feud of all time because it's what got me back into wrestling, as I've talked about. You know, Greg, you talked about how much you loved, Raven and Benoit, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was a huge mark for DDP and Benoit, and Raven was like my favorite heel. So I just wanted to see Raven and Benoit like feud for the rest of time, basically. Yeah. I didn't want them to ever stop feuding.
Yeah.
That's how much I was into that.
Yep.
But then when DDP got involved and he'd been picking up steam, I'd been liking what he was laying down. I'm like, okay, yeah, this feels like a promotion that is booked like specifically for me and catering directly to my interests. So that goes a long way when you're, like you said, 14 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. This kind of has everything, and it's designed to really, I guess, transition Chris Benoit out of this feud. Like you said, it's more focused on Raven and DDP, like directly fighting. Yeah, Benoit's in there, but he doesn't have a lot of involvement with Paige, other than there's some double team stuff, you know, this unholy alliance between Raven and Benoit, sending DDP into the light board, which great spectacular visual on that.
Yeah.
But really, once this is over, it's kind of like, all right, Benoit is now out of the U.S. title picture, although he and Raven have one more singles match. It's on the Nitro. I only remember because it's the Nitro right after this show. It's one of the Spring Breakout Nitros. And it's awesome. They brawl all over the Club La Villa. So that's worth checking out if you want to see the kind of little known blow off between Raven and Benoit from this feud. And so from there on out, it's going to be Raven and DDP, which we have talked about. Again, we've covered that Spring Stampede match. This is a great way to get us there. But it just, you know, God, Raven, I noticed gets very little offense in this match. He is just pretty much there to eat shit. Right. Particularly from Benoit. I mean, Raven and Benoit just matched up so well together because it's like Benoit was the sadist to Raven's masochist in a way. And it's a perfect pairing, really complimentary. And as sort of botchy as it was, that finish does work with the diamond cutter off the top rope. It just,
that's awesome.
I think what happened there was Raven sort of landed on his feet before DDP had even really come down onto the table.
Because he's so tall as fuck.
Yeah. So it was just an awkward move to try to pull off anyway. But yeah, I that was much worse than him just going to flush. Raven just going flush through the table, right? Mm-hmm. So he may have been trying to protect himself. I don't know, but I can't imagine it worked. And he must have been feeling it, yeah, the next day. I would agree. I do agree that this held up to the memory. I'm with you, Greg. First, you know, triple threat I can remember in WCW. They had done triangle matches, right? Where it's
right.
It's three guys in the same match, but it's more tag style, or where there's only two guys in the ring at the same time, in other words. Or they'll have a match between two guys, then the third guy comes in and takes the winner, right? They've done variations on that, but not all three going at once.
And so
I don't think WWF had even done a real true ECW style triple threat match, and right? So-
doing like three-way spot, like I do remember Big Bubba and or whatever, the Guardian Angel, Sting, and Vader at some paper,
right? That's what I'm thinking of.
And
yeah.
And but they weren't doing like complex three-man spots in that match, like they were not.
No it was I think it started out Vader and Big Bubba, and then it came down to Vader and Sting, right? And they also had the Sting Flair Luger thing at Starcade,
but that was like you had to beat the first guy to get to the second guy or whatever.
Yeah, again, yeah, just more of a, they call it a triangle match.
Right. And the WWF, I don't think it had a televised one. I know that they had it, which I've only found recently. They had it that some January 97 MSG show. They did Brett, Shawn, and Sid in great, but like it was not, you know, it wasn't televised nationwide. So, yeah, this was really a groundbreaking match. I mean, obviously ECW gets the credit.
ECW was doing it, yeah.
You know, for innovating the concept, but WCW kind of brought it to the masses.
Mm. Yeah, and as much as we kind of joke about how, you know, that 95 uncensored being WCW's answer to ECW, this match is a direct answer to the ECW style of match that was really gaining popularity. I mean, this is the influences are all over this as discussed. It's straight out of ECW, perhaps a little bit more sanitized, but
100% more sanitized, but still has that same heart to it. That same heart speaks to me, for sure.
The same DNA, Raven and Benoit, certainly. So. I absolutely love this feud. I love the story. I love how it's sort of a second act, right, before transitioning into kind of the grand feud of that spring, Raven and DDP.
Mm-hmm.
just goes to show, it's like Chris Jericho said, if you took that WCW undercard and mid-card, combined it with the WWF main event scene, you've got an unstoppable promotion.
Oh, 100%.
Boy, did WCW know how to book a mid-card. Holy shit.
To be quite honest, I don't think even counting AEW, I don't think anybody to this day has ever done their mid-card and low-card as well as WCW did. Like,
I would agree.
It was constant, awesome feud after awesome feud, incredible talent, matches that were given time, stories that were given time to play out. It's kind of one of those things that when WCW and WCW it had kind of died out by the end, but like, you know, it's one of those things that when WCW died, this sort of died with it. I mean, there was that couple of years in the WWF where they had a really, really great mid card, like 2000, 2001 and stuff. But like, you know, the WCW really had that, like you said, if they just could have taken the main event scene from the WWF at that time, or if these guys had been allowed to eventually graduate to the main event scene and take these matches to the main event scene, things might have been different too. But it took DDP the next year before he was an entrenched world title contender, and then it was as a heel, and then Benoit never got there, Raven never got there, and so I think it's a prime example. This show is more about bringing attention to the great stuff that WCW did, but like, that's an example of kind of where they eventually went wrong, was not trusting these guys and letting these guys go out and do their thing, you know, starting here, and then by the end of 98, all three of these guys should have been in main events. And you know, obviously DDP got the match with Goldberg, but other than that, you know, they were not considered Hogan, Hall, Nash, Goldberg, etc.
Yeah, man. And it's just like you said, a sensibility towards that mid card to actually care and to realize, you know what, there are different types of wrestling fans. There are different types of consumers. Mm-hmm. Not everybody's going to necessarily show up for our geriatric main events, right? Some guys want to see like the lucha action. Mm-hmm. Some want to see, you know, heavy work rate. Others are like into the CCW style brawling. And they really had that eye towards something for everyone. Like, it's not just, oh, the main event is going to sell our show and fuck everything else. I think that's a very common sensibility, and it's a way of keeping it simple, right? As mm-hmm. long as you've got a strong main event scene, you can kind of let the rest take care of itself. But WCW didn't do that. They realized this is going to put some butts in the seats, as they say. It certainly put mine in front of my television, I'll tell you that much.
And let me tell you, that being at that show, there was such a world of difference between the crowd reaction and how we felt after this match and the buzz. That we would have had such a great buzz leaving the building mm-hmm. if this match into the show. But then the main event that night, which was Hogan and Savage in a cage, which was, it was okay. It wasn't as bad as its reputation. It's not great or anything, but it's just a kind of mediocre match. And then, but then it has like the weirdest, worst ending in the world. And then nobody knew what the hell was going on, and we kind of left confused. But this match, this DDP Raven and Benoit match, was like, okay, that was worth the price of admission. The whole show was great up to that point, really, but that match was worth the price of admission alone.
Well, and to your earlier point too about conditioning your audience, I think as much flack as the main event scene does get in WCW, and now I'm going into apologist mode, so you just have to put up with this. But I think that WCW had kind of trained their audience to know, look, the real main event is going to happen before the last match on our pay-per-views. Like, people knew, WCW fans knew you weren't going to get work rate classics in their main events. You did not expect to see fucking Hogan and, you know, 98 Savage tear the house down, right? You just it wasn't gonna happen, and you were more, again, used to seeing those main events as more storyline driven, not match driven. And I'm not saying that's the right approach. I'm not saying that's how I would book a promotion, but WCW fans kind of knew the score.
Yeah.
Word. So I don't think it was taken as, oh God, I thought it was going to be this. And it was like, after enough swervy screw job, what the hell was that? Pay-per-view main events, and they're still making money. You have to assume the consumer knows what they're getting going in.
It was the feeling, part of WCW's appeal was that even if you're sitting through the boring 10 to 15 minute main event involving, you know, Hulk Hogan and old man Roddy Piper or old man Savage or whatever, you're probably
old man Bret Hart.
Yeah, old man Bret Hart. There was a feeling that anything could happen at a given time. So like Sting could drop from the ceiling, or, you know, Kevin Nash could come out and nonsensically turn on somebody. You know, there was always that feeling that anything,
yes,
you had to pay attention, because, you know, at a given moment, I remember being there at the show and the Disciple showing up, and none of us knew who in the hell he was. And he standing in the ring, like, what the hell is that guy doing in the ring? He just looked like a random biker. And some of us thought it was a fan that jumped in the cage.
And then he hits the stunner on Sting or whatever, yeah, right? Like, it's just like, what?
Savage turns on Sting and then walks out, even though he had just been fighting Hogan in a cage match. But nonetheless, it was just, WCW was all about entertaining chaos at times. And that variety of styles, so that, you know, it's hard to say that you didn't get your money's worth, even if you didn't like the main event, when you saw a match like DDP or Jericho and Malenko, or Eddie and Conan, or Booker T. And Booker and Eddie, I think, wrestled on this show.
Yes, they sure did.
And so when you see matches like that, like, you can't really complain that you didn't get your money's worth. So it's just a different approach from WWE, which kind of built everything around the main event. And hell with the rest of it, you know? So.
Well, speaking of entertaining chaos, whose pick is it next?
That's a great question. Whose pick was it last time? That's the way I keep this straight.
Right? It was this one, and I selected Uncensored due to the March situation.
Ah, the month of the Ides of March, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, who was our last episode? Steamboat?
Right? Steamboat.
Steamboat, that's correct.
Who picked Steamboat?
I think you did, Tim.
Did I pick Steamboat? Then I think that means Jenny, you must be next.
All right. I had an idea here, and then I didn't know if I Mandela affected myself into thinking that we had already done this person. But y'all just let me know if we've talked any Roddy Piper.
We have not.
Oh, gosh. We haven't.
All right. So I think maybe it's time for some Piper.
Let's do it.
Yeah. There's a few ways we can go with that one, too. You can get some early Piper, some very early Piper, and some very late Piper.
I wonder which way we'll go. So.
And let me tell you, I might be the world's biggest late 1996 apologist.
I hear you. All right. Well, that's interesting.
I think he did. I think Roddy Piper in 96 and early 97 has some of the best promos in WCW history. But
okay,
I could be mistaken.
I'll fight you.
Well, we'll hopefully get into some of those on our next episode.
All right. Great pick. Because I was wondering, gosh, who's a big name we haven't done yet? And it's like, that's perfect. So I like it, Jenny. Very good.
What do you guys have going on podcast-wise? Greg, anything?
No, nothing in the podcasting world. It is that time of year when my old companion Nick Duke and I always have our WrestleMania marathon the week of.
Of course, yes.
So we're currently plotting out our gimmick for the year. We try to mix it up every year and have it, like, sometimes we do top shows, top matches, bottom shows and bottom matches we've done. That again anytime soon. So last year we did, I think we did an NXT thing last year. We're going to, I think we've settled, it's been long enough. We're going to do our top WrestleMania shows and pick a certain number that we're going to watch. and do that again. So
Sounds good.
We're not going to necessarily tell the world about it except through Twitter, but it should be a fun time nonetheless.
Where are you at on Twitter?
Oh yes. People can find me at gphillips8652 and it's a swimmingly good time.
It is. What about you, Timothy?
It is always a great time. You can find me on Twitter. I am at Cyke68, C-Y-K-E-6-8. You can also hear me on Place B Nation Wrestling, this podcast network you are listening to. In addition to this show, Jenny, you and I have PTB NXT. That is with our good friend Jacob Williams in third chair. Got an episode of that. Mm-hmm. Kind of right alongside this one. If you haven't heard it already, should be out pretty soon. The latest PTB NXT. We're kind of on that march to take over the rematch between Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, this time with Sami challenging Owens for the title. So kind of timely there, given what's happening currently, you know, in the main event scene of modern day WWE. Check out as well a comics podcast that I've started on Place B Nation Pop. That is with Sean Kidd, Andy Atherton, and Scott Shiflett. It's called Traitors of the Lost Arcs. We're just going through kind of little known, less talked about, or just overlooked comic stories. And granted, not all of them are that unknown. Like our most recent episode was kind of chronicling a rather infamous scene from comics, but I don't know that people entirely understand the context around it. So we did a series of issues from Avengers. Let's just say it was the slap heard around the world. rather uncomfortable subject matter talked about in that episode, but wow, comics were wild in the early 80s. But check that out on Place B Nation. Pop. What else? We have 9021 NOSO. So that's its own network. Just Google 9021 NOSO in your preferred podcatcher app. That's myself, JT Rosero, just reviewing episode by episode, the OG Beverly Hills 90210. They rotating special guest for each episode. Jenny, you're coming up on one.
I am.
That should be dropping pretty shortly. That show drops about every third Friday, every 3 weeks, sometimes every 2 weeks, just depending on how far ahead we get in our schedule. So labor of love there. Jenny, I know you've got a bevy of podcasts as well.
A whole bevy of them. You're right. You can find them on Wednesdays here on the North-South Connection. Oh, no, over on the North-South Connection. Yep. I do a lot of podcasts. So, And so I have you heard about Pluto, which is really fun, and then a couple of new podcasts, GC Dub, a game changing podcast, and it covers like a monthly recap of GCW. I do that with my friend Matt Souza, and then Logan Crosland and Cowboy and I are reviewing documentaries in a show called Talking Docs. A new one of that is pretty soon, so check those out. Every Wednesday, you'll find one of my shows. And then, you already said my other wrestling shows, so just find me on Twitter. I'm at Jenny Position. And that's it. Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next time.
Thanks, guys.